If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome in to another episode of the Math Step Back Podcast. I'm your host, Dalton Trigg. You can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Dalton_Trigg. I'm joined by my co-host, Drew Johnson. You can find him on X at CoachDrew33. You can find the pod account at Step Back Mavs, and be sure to like, rate, and subscribe on all your favorite podcast platforms. DJ, it was not the Sunday afternoon we were looking for. It got off to a really, really bad start. It actually looked like a carbon copy of game one because Kawhi Leonard was ruled out for game four. And, you know, the only game the Clippers had won this series up to this point was game one when Kawhi didn't play. And it was because the Mavs had a horrible offensive first half. Well, the Mavs came out and they did it again. They had a horrible offensive first half, you know, really, really bad in the first quarter specifically. And then, you know, they were down by 31 points at a certain point in the first half and down by 17 at halftime, came all the way back to take a one-point lead with a little less than 2 minutes left. And then just couldn't get the job done. And the Clippers ultimately won the game 116 to 111. We have a completely new series now. It's now become a best of three. And game five will be in Los Angeles on Wednesday, late Wednesday night, 9 p.m. And it'll be a pivotal game five. So, DJ, I mean, what are your takeaways? So, I mean, there's so much we've got to get into with this game and what went wrong. But, I mean, just fresh feelings off of that one. What you thinking?
Well, some of my feelings aren't fit for public consumption. But I will say this. I thought that the early foul trouble took us out of our rhythm defensively, whatever rhythm we had. And I think that also bled over to the offensive end because you had players that – were taking shots and doing things offensively that they weren't comfortable doing. For instance, I think Josh Green took a couple threes in the first half. It may have been just one, but it was so magnified that it felt like way more. Anyway, non-shooters need to stop settling for jump shots, specifically in the first half whenever we're trying to set a tone. Also, it would be great if Kyrie Irving could stop taking the first quarter off because whenever Luka, it was bad. It was awful because Luka couldn't hit anything today. I think he went like 1 for 9 or something. So, you know, we need Kyrie to be more assertive from the get-go. Whenever he gets going, he's amazing. He's a wizard. But we need to get him going from the get-go because right now, I don't know if Luka's hurt or whatever, but it's just not happening for him.
Yeah, there's something going on because that knee – it gave him trouble last game. You know, he said it was stiff after the game. He was a game time decision going into this one. You know, he was questionable and he stayed questionable until like the very start of the game. But yeah, look, it's kind of the same concept we've talked about with the Clippers and Kawhi. Like, you know, if Luka, I mean, yeah, he had a 29 point triple double today, but the efficiency is still very off. You know, 10 of 24 overall, 1 of 9 from 3. You know, he can't be – I don't think you want Luka shooting 9 to 10 three-pointers a game, if not more, if he's only going to make a couple of them. Like, it's just not there. The shooting touch is not there for Luka. you know, like you said, Kyrie, he does tend to take the first quarters off. It takes him some time to get going. And I don't know if that's like a physical thing with him, like he just has to get warmed up, or, you know, it's a team thing. Like, okay, well, Luka, you start and I'll finish it. But, you know, something's got to give, because, you know, if Kawhi Leonard doesn't play in game five, then, you know, you look at this series, how it's played out so far, and it's like, okay, well, the two games that he hasn't played in, the Mavs have gotten off to horrible starts, and it's been too much to overcome, because by the time they fight back, they've run out of gas. And I mean, look, to be fair, I mean, the Clippers shot making, especially in the first half, it didn't matter. Like, the Mavs were actually playing pretty decent defense.
It was otherworldly.
On Paul George. Yeah, it was. Otherworldly is exactly how to describe it, because Paul George and James Harden were hitting everything. They did not want their season to be pushed to the brink of elimination, you know, after game four today. And they both came out, played exceptionally well, 33 points for each of them. Paul George shot 11 of 19 from the field, 7 of 10 on his threes. 7 of 10 from three for Paul George. And then James Harden was 12 of 17 overall and 4 of 5 on his threes. Like,
also ridiculous. Yeah, like, they, okay, so here's the stats. They had they were 62% from three on the game, which is insanity. They shot better from three. They shot better from three than they did from the field. They shot 53% from the field, 62% from three. Here's another good one. LA had 5 people shoot 50% or better from three, 3 of which shot 60% or better. And I'm pretty sure 2 people, yeah, it was James Harden and Paul George, shot above 70%. You can't beat anybody whenever they're shooting the ball that well. I don't care what you do.
I feel like this only happens to the Mavs when it's against the Clippers in the playoffs. Like, that kind of outrageous shot.
Several years ago, too. And that's what today really reminded me of, was whenever we played against that Monte Ellis, Baron Davis, Steven Jackson Warriors team that hit everything they took. That's what it reminded me of.
And look, there was a point in this game where the Mavs came all the way back. They were within 2 points a couple of separate occasions, and they couldn't get past that 2-point plateau. And then they found themselves down 1, and then Kyrie Irving had an insane finish with 3 defenders around him to give the Mavs a 105-103 lead. And then Paul George did this with less than 2 minutes remaining. So the Mavs finally got the lead. Derek Jones playing excellent defense on him. And then Paul George hits a fading into the corner rainbow over the corner of the backboard 3 that hits nothing but net. I mean, there's nothing else Derek Jones Jr. could have done on that right there. I mean, that's
the only person on earth, I think, that could have done anything with that shot would have been Victor Wembanyama. And we're talking about a once in a lifetime freak. No, Paul George is one of the best I've ever seen at flow shooting. That means he doesn't have to see the rim. He doesn't have to see anything. He just, his body just knows where it's going to be. And just depending on like where he releases it and stuff, he's able to make really difficult shots, even whenever he's not able to see where he's aiming. And it pisses me off, but you have to tip your hat to him, because that was an unbelievable shot. That looked like, do you remember whenever, I hate to bring this up, but do you remember whenever LeBron James hit that fading out of bounds 3 against the Pistons back whenever he played for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I did.
Sent him to the finals. You remember that?
I remember that.
That's exactly like what that shot was. Very similar. And again, it's just a feel flow shot. That's all it is. But yeah, that broke our backs. That's pretty much what ended the game, in my opinion.
This was the shot from Kyrie that I was talking about when the Mavs were down 104-103, and he somehow hung in the air and got that to go in to give the Mavs their first lead at 105-104, first lead since the first quarter when they were up 8-7. And you just kind of felt like, okay, maybe this is the breakthrough. This is the moment where they're going to push through and finish this out and take a commanding 3-1 lead. And then that Paul George shot was just a complete backbreaker. And well, then another thing. Oh, go ahead.
As a coach, and I hate to change the subject, but as a coach, you know, you fight back from 31 down and you finally get the lead. This is just my personal preference. You take a timeout. You take a timeout because now you need to shift your focus into holding on to this lead. And where does that focus take you? To the defensive end of the ball, which we struggled late in that game. And I know it's because we were gassed, but there's certain things you can physically overcome with your mental if you are able to shift that focus. And you're only able to do that as a coach if you call a timeout at that point in time.
Yeah, I agree. So, and look, that not just the timeout part of it, but, you know, there were a couple different things that I think we have to kind of look and say, well, look, what was Jason Kidd thinking here?
Yeah.
This one I'm about to show, this is from Kevin O'Connor. He's a writer for The Ringer. Does a lot of good stuff for them, podcasts, all that good stuff. But so during the fourth quarter, James Harden could not be stopped with his floater. I mean, he kept getting into the paint with no resistance. PJ Washington couldn't stop him. Well, Kevin O'Connor, he shared this clip, and he was just like, something that completely shocked him was that Kidd didn't try putting in Gafford or Derek Lively instead of Maxey, who wasn't contesting. He wasn't contesting these floater attempts at all.
He can't do it. I don't understand. Like, first of all, let's just dissect all this nonsense. Okay. First of all, is PJ Washington sitting on James Harden's right hand?
Yeah.
James Harden is a left-handed basketball. He's left-hand dominant, first of all, but that's not even the point. At this level, at the NBA level, you cannot take away a hand because all these guards are ambidextrous. They are all ambidextrous. They can all go either way. They can all finish with either hand. Okay, they're not NBA players just because they're gigantic. Okay, these people are skilled. So sitting on someone's hand at this level is absolutely preposterous, in my opinion. Second, you sit on the wrong hand, and we've done this all game. We've been doing it all game. We've done this matador nonsense all game long. We just let them blow by us and expect someone to clean up the mess. Well, this time it really hurts us because, like you said, we have Maxey Kleber back there, who is not a shot alterer in any sense of the word. So, again, we have to think. We have to have a thought process as a coach as far as who we have in there and how we are, you know, performing our coverages, because this didn't work. It didn't work all game long. We have to have defensive adjustments, and it just wasn't there today.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, look, I do agree with that assessment from Kevin O'Connor about, you know, Maxey Kleber, because I mean, he's just sitting there. He's just a sitting duck. He's not contesting anything. And look, the flip side of that is, well, you know, if Maxey does contest that floater from Harden, then Zubat, he's like the Pokemon. That's how I'll remember
it. As annoying as those guys were on the game.
Zubats, you know, he could still dunk it. I mean, if you take away Harden's floater, then you still have the lob attempt for him, for Zubats. And that comes down to PJ Washington.
Yeah.
PJ cannot get cooked the way he did as many times as he did by James Harden. 33, I think he's 33 or 34 years old, James Harden, that badly in the fourth quarter. That's something that PJ is going to have to take personally going into the last three games of this series, because that was hard to watch, honestly. I mean, PJ has been spectacular, but it was hard to watch.
I hate to say this, Dalton. I'm not sure this is entirely on PJ, and I hate to constantly just ring Kidd out, but whenever you see something happen over and over and over again, something really specific like that, like how he's guarding Harden and how everybody was guarding everyone out there. I mean, everyone was sitting on a hand. Not just how they guarded Harden. That's how they guarded Paul George. That's how they guarded Russell Westbrook. That's how they guarded everyone out there. Norman Powell. That's how they literally guarded everyone out there. They wanted to take away their quote-unquote dominant hand, But we didn't even do that with James Harden. I don't know if we couldn't figure out that he's left-handed or not. But whenever something happens over and over again and they keep giving up straight line drives over and over and over again, you have to think it's by design. And the only thing that I can figure is they're relying on their, you know, shot blockers down low to alter stuff like that. But that's a very, very poor idea unless you have some really extensive backside rotation going on. And the Clippers have way too many shooters to be able to do anything like that. You can't just take someone away to rotate down. Because it's like you said, if you do rotate this thing right, and the person comes up to take away that drive, if the post player comes up to take away that drive, it's an easy flip to Zubac on the on the backside short corner, and it's a dunk. And we actually saw that several times today. So I think it was by design. And if that really is the case, we need to go back to the film room and really reevaluate how we want to play defense from now on, because that's not working.
Well, this is going to sound blasphemous, but you know, I almost wonder if it would be in the Mavs' best interest to rest Luka until Friday. I know that sounds blasphemous. I know you pretty much have to have him on the court to have a legitimate chance to win, but he just doesn't look like himself right now. Like I don't know, and we talked about this in some previous pods, you know, I'm sure some of it is physical. I'm not doubting that his knee isn't hurt and he's having to fight. You know, he's been a warrior. He's fighting through some stuff and he's not sitting out because he probably feels like he can't sit out. But, you know, another part of it is, like, I wonder how much of it is mental, because, you know, he's exerted so much energy on the defensive end, more than he has ever before, in my opinion. This entire season has been his best defensive year by far. And a part of me wonders if that, paired with the knee issue, paired with the, you know, the psyche part of it, that, you know, you've never beaten the Clippers. You know, the last time they played the Clippers in 2021, they won both games in LA to start the series to go up 2-0, and then they ended up losing that series in 7. So a part of me wonders how much of it's mental, how much of it's physical. If it's mostly physical, then I feel like you have to try and rest him just so you get your best out of him, you know, after whatever happens in Wednesday's game 5. But I know he's going to end up playing. I know what I'm saying is blasphemous and he's not going to sit out. I just wonder, you know, what the team would look like overall without him, you know, shooting the way he's shooting and having a couple lapses because he's just like worn out on defense.
I would be terrified to do that, honestly, because whenever you do that,
I know you don't do that. I'm just saying,
even though he is not making shots, and even though he has kind of been a liability defensively because he can't move, if you take him out of the rotation, he draws so much attention. And even though it doesn't look like it right now, he opens things up so much for Kyrie Irving and for others, but especially for Kyrie Irving. And if you take him out of the rotation, everybody keys on Kyrie, and then you have no offense, zero, nothing. You have people taking jump shots that don't need to be taking jump shots already. That gets amplified tenfold, I think, if you take Luka out of the rotation, unfortunately. Oh, this hurts. This pisses me off.
For those who are not watching on YouTube and listening, I've put this picture up of, you know, basically a summary of how game 4 went for the Mavs. So, as you all know, in game 3, there was a scrum where PJ Washington had his arms crossed and he was just staring at the Clippers bench. Well, when Paul George was just roasting the Mavs in the first half and couldn't miss, like everything he shot was going in, he did the same thing. He crossed his arms and was just staring at the Mavs fans sitting on the first row. So, that's a hard pill to swallow. And, you know, I would like to think that PJ Washington would respond in the appropriate way going forward. But that one hurt.
Yeah, that sucks. That's not what you want to see.
Just looking at the box score again, you know, We talked about Paul George. We talked about Harden. Zubats had 13 points in this one, shot 6 of 11. I mean, he only had 4 rebounds. So, I mean, this wasn't even like, you know, a huge performance from him like he's had in previous games. There was one play where the Mavs just – he thought he was going to have an easy dunk, and there were 3 Mavs that came in, and it was almost like a triple block. You had Terrence Mann and Norman Powell, the only other 2 Clipper players to score in double figures with 11 apiece. So, I mean, this was just a case of Paul George and James Harden willing the Clippers to a win is what
this
came
about. Let's talk about Terrence Mann for a second, okay, and our coverage of him. Whenever we bring double teams, usually it's from the backside, and it's usually the person who's guarding Terrence Mann. And would you believe it if I told you that Terrence Mann went 3 for 6 from 3 from the corner, shot 50%. We can't do that anymore. It's like I said, it was like I was talking about earlier with the rotations. If we were going to play the way that Kidd has us playing right now, you would have to rotate in a way that's going to leave either the corner open or somewhere else on the perimeter open on the backside. They shoot the ball way too well, including Terrence Mann. Guard Terrence Mann. For God's sake, at least put a hand up, because you can't do that.
I'd have to go back and look at the highlights to be sure on this, but it felt like the majority of those Terrence Mann corner threes came after timeouts, like immediately after timeouts, where it's like, you know, how do you leave him completely wide open like that?
The doubles and the switches would come so freaking late in the defensive possession that it would just leave people wide open. Like, there were several instances where we would give up dunks, we'd give up layups, we'd give up open Terrence Mann threes in the corner. Like, if we're going to do something like that, if we're going to stunt defensively, it's got to be quick. It's got to happen really fast, and then you got to recover really fast. And that backside rotation has to be on point, because if you don't, at this level, the ball moves so quickly that you're going to give up openings, and these guys are way too good to be doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, it's you know, it's funny. We always have to kind of give a glance at the plus-minus stuff, because, look, I mean, you got – anytime we talk about plus-minus, it has to be taken with a grain of salt, because that's really a team stat. You know, it's not an individual thing, because you're on the floor with four other players. So you got to take it with a grain of salt. But it is funny, you know, how we're talking about, you know, Luka struggling in this series for the most part. But, you know, you look at the box score, and he had a 29-point triple-double, and he was a plus 10 for the game.
So. Well, that's why you watch the game. I mean, looking at the stats, you think that, you know, Luka didn't shoot the ball that great, but overall he was, you know, awesome, in which case he was not. In which case, he struggled.
And meanwhile, Kyrie Irving had 40 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists in this one, shot 14 of 25 overall, hit 6 of his 12 threes, but he ended up being a minus 5 in this game. And, you know, we were talking about it before we came on here, DJ. It was kind of a – like, the Mavs don't get back in this game without Kyrie Irving. He was incredible offensively, but – he also had some plays, like some really head-scratching plays, some plays that really hurt. You know, he dribbled off his foot one time. It led to a turnover. He had a chance to give the Mavs the lead by – let's see, they were down. Yeah, the Mavs had cut it to 2, and he had a chance to give the Mavs a lead, you know, way before that Paul George sequence, you know, with 2 minutes left. He didn't hit that. You know, on the defensive side, there were some lapses. There were some times where it felt like, okay, you know, we've got some momentum, but, you know, Kyrie just wasn't able to put it all together completely. And I'm trying to say that as respectful as possible. Kyrie Irving was awesome, and he is the biggest reason probably that the Mavs were able to get back in this game, especially when Luka couldn't hit anything. But, you know, it was too little too late. And this is, again, this is why you don't go down by 31 points in the first half, because by the time you get to the fourth quarter and you've made this comeback from all the way down that many points, you've kind of run out of gas, and your mental focus isn't as strong as it would have been, you know, if you hadn't exerted all that energy coming back from that big of a deficit. And, you know, it leads to some untimely turnovers and stuff like that. So, 7 turnovers for Kyrie in this one, 3 for Luka, not ideal. So, and,
well, let's just be clear though. I mean, Kyrie Irving's great. He is at his best whenever he is being, aggressive. And you're going to have some turnovers whenever you're being as aggressive with the ball as he is. My biggest complaint with Kyrie Irving is he's got to be aggressive early on.
Earlier. Yeah.
Especially if Luka is hurt like we think he is and is limited like he appears to be. Because if Luka's limited, you got to have someone else step up and, you know, take that starring role early on. Kyrie was great down the stretch. But it's like you said, whenever you're having to come back from a 31-point deficit, I mean.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's very difficult. That's why not many people do it.
And this is just a side note here. Obviously, you know, the vast majority of the blame for this game goes on the Mavs, whether we want to blame it on. It was a combination, really. It was how the players came out. It was Kidd and some of his questionable coaching decisions that that unfortunately keep being brought up every couple of games, it seems like. So that's the main reason the Mavs are in a tied series going back on the road for game 5. But, you know, another thing I'd like to see is more consistency from the officiating crew going into the – because, you know, the first 3 games of this series, everybody got away with murder both ways. And then to start this one, they started calling ticky-tack fouls that got Luka in foul trouble. And it wasn't just the mat. I mean, it was both ways. I mean, there were fouls being called on both teams, just really ticky-tack stuff. And I feel like that really messed up the flow. You know, it messed up the rotation flow and when guys are supposed to stay in and go out and all that. I would just like to see more consistency on that end of the floor. And then, you know, there's certain things that annoy me. Like James Harden, he could sense that it was, you know, kind of ticky-tacky in that first half, and he started flopping. You know, he got a foul on a 3-point. Well, they didn't call it a shooting foul, but he still, you know, flopped and got the foul call. But then, you know, Luka, there were a couple times on the other end where there was more contact than what Harden gets on those plays. He got a foul call, and Luka doesn't get him on that end. So, I mean, it's stuff like that kind of annoys me. Overall, the officiating has been pretty even, so I'm not trying to say, you know, the Mavs lost because of officiating. I just wish they would be consistent because up until this point, they let everybody play with maximum physicality, and then they brought it back in for this one, and now it's like, well, what are we expecting for game 5? Like, yeah, how's that going to change the approach for both teams going into game 5? Because if they call it like they did today, I feel like that favors the Clippers, especially if they go small.
I'm always really hesitant to openly criticize officials simply because, you know, they have a hard job to do. I get it. It's really hard to make these calls. But what we have to understand is this, or what I've noticed is this. They call extremely late fouls, not based off what the play, at least this is what it looks like to me, not based off the play that happens, but based off the reaction of the players. There was a time where James Harden did something, and it was a foul, but James Harden acted like he got raked across the face, and they went to the replay monitor, and nothing happened in the vicinity of James Harden's whole head. So, yeah. But they made the call based off of that reaction. There were several other instances like that too. And that's frustrating. That's frustrating from a player standpoint. That's really frustrating from a coach's standpoint. So I would like to see that not happen. But at the same time, we have to treat every game as its own separate entity. So we have to be ready to play with whatever officiating comes out of that gate. Again, can't blame it on the officials. It is on the players to adjust. It is on the coaches to make those adjustments. So treat and every again, game like
a look, just to be perfectly clear, I'm not going to blame officials at all. I'm just saying it would be nice if they called it as playoff basketball for an entire series, because that's what I don't like. But and it's not the same officiating crew from game to game. They switch it up. So that's part of why that happens. Today it was like Ben Taylor, who has some, I'm pretty sure has some history with Luka. you gotta play the cards that are dealt, and I wish that they would be able to look at how the series had been called up until this point and would have a little bit more consistency. But look, sometimes the outcome of a game is pretty simple. And the one stat I look at is the 3-point shooting, not just the Clippers shooting 62.1%, but they hit 18 threes and the Mavs hit 11 threes. So that's 7 more threes than the Mavs. And the Mavs lost by 5 points.
Also, look at the percentage on the Mavs. And just think about this. You had people shooting threes that didn't need to be shooting threes, first of all. I mean, I think we shot 33% as a team. Am I right on that? I think I looked at it earlier.
Right. That's right.
And, whenever they shoot double the percentage that you're shooting, it's just really hard to compete with that.
And another thing I looked at, because you could feel that he had a positive impact on the game, but I just wanted to go look at the box score to make sure that the way I felt matched with, what the result was. But Mason Plumlee coming off the bench for the Clippers, he only played, or was it, is it Mason or Miles Plumlee?
It's Mason.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. It was Mason Plumlee. He came off the bench for 14 minutes. And was a plus 12 in those 14 minutes for the Clippers. Had 6 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks. Did a little bit of everything. Went 3 of 3. He played a big factor in this win for the Clippers. So, that paired with the 3-point discrepancy, all that, has us in a deadlocked, tied series at 2-2. And this isn't, it's not over for the Mavs. I mean, obviously the Mavs can still beat this team 2 times in 3 games, but it's going to be interesting to see how Luka looks the rest of this series, because they need him to hit some shots, and it just hasn't happened yet. We've been waiting on it. Well, we've been saying, also I've been saying mostly, that it's coming for him, and maybe it's not coming. Maybe this is just the style of basketball that's going to be played for the rest of this series. And if that's the case, it may come down to just how the Mavs start the game. Because if they start like they did today back on the road, it's not going to be pretty. And the Mavs will be coming back home down 3-2 if that happens. But we'll see. I mean, the Mavs all season, typically they do a pretty good job of responding to a tough loss. And, if they're able to do that in Los Angeles and get that 3-2 lead, I'd feel pretty good about them coming back home for a potential closeout game. So we'll see how it goes. But any other closing thoughts before we head out here?
Get Irvin going early. Determine a different manner of defending. We got to make our coverages need to be completely different, because this is not working. And number 3, I didn't really say much about this earlier, but our transition defense has got to be better. And I mean, that goes along with everything else, but our transition defense is absolutely terrible. It's got, like, we've got to stop ball. That's our biggest thing, is we've got to stop ball.
And, if you don't turn the ball over, you don't have to worry as much about transition defense.
It's not just turning the ball over. It's bad shots. It's those ill-advised three-pointers that I was talking about earlier. More often than not, bad shot selection leads to easy shots on the other end for the other team. Yep. That's why it's so important for us to value each offensive possession And I can't really say that we do that. That's a bad habit that needs to be addressed by Jason Kidd, and it needs to be nipped in the bud.
17 turnovers by the Mavs today.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, yeah, more times than not, that's not going to get it done. They gotta take care of the ball better. And, you know, hopefully they respond how we've seen them do several times throughout the course of this season. Hopefully they respond in the right way in game five on Wednesday. It's going to be one of those late night burning the midnight oil nights for that one, because the tip off time is at 9 p.m. Central. So
we better freaking win.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be up late pissed off.
if they win, you know, we'll stay up till 1 a.m. if we have to. But, you know, yeah. You know, it makes it better when they come off a big win. But, you know, we appreciate all y'all coming on here and listening to us after every game. We have enjoyed this series, the ups and downs. This is NBA playoff basketball at its finest. Every win feels like you're on top of the world. Every loss feels like it's so over. And then when the Mavs come back and win in game
we're so back.
We're going to keep riding that wave until we can't ride it anymore. So, guys, appreciate it. Be sure to go like, rate, and subscribe on all your favorite podcast platforms, and hit that subscribe button on YouTube especially. Leave us some likes and comments on there. Appreciate it, y'all. Y'all have a good one. We'll see you Wednesday.
Thanks, guys.